Hello and welcome to a football podcast. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined by Mr. Nick Andrade on today's show. Stephen Caldwell joins us to talk Lorenzo Insigne's blockbuster move to TFC, along with Richie Larea's move to Nottingham Forest, Tejan Buchanan settling in Belgium, and big Canada men's national team games coming up in January. Plus, Stevie stuck around to answer questions on the mailbag as well, because he's a legend. But Nick, I'm back, baby! And David is nowhere to be seen. A single tear. I know. A single tear.
You finally come back, and he couldn't come on the show. We've been waiting over, how long, 2 months has it been since you've been on the show?
I think around there, yeah.
Oh my
God. I'm on a strict talking for 1 hour and 15 minutes a day, strict regimen. So I have to really, really siphon off this time. No, Mr. Goss is on super draft duty, which is happening as you listen to this on Tuesday, I believe. And he might be in Toronto as well, which is serendipitous. But
is he here already?
I don't know. He didn't respond to our...
Yeah, he didn't respond. He doesn't want to meet us, probably.
He sent us a plane emoji and that was it, like, I'm here, but I hopped on the PJ, but that's about it in terms of reaching out to you guys. We want to congratulate, though, Mr. Goss got engaged. We are not going to play Celebrate by Cool the Gang because it's cursed. No. We're just going to say very happy for Mr. Goss and Co. and Megan. Awesome stuff. Wish them the best. Love you guys. Nick, how are you, man? How's life?
I'm good. I have one story about DG too. We were planning these interviews for the last month or so during the holiday season, especially you were away as well. But there was one interview we still had to do, and I was like kind of pestering him, and he wasn't responding and whatever, blah, blah. But then he's just like, oh, sorry, man. Like, I've just been planning my engagement. I'm like, what the hell? This whole time, I'm like, I'm so sorry. I didn't know that you were planning your engagement.
But that's the expert flip, right? Like when someone's on you and they're trying to get at you and you're like, oh, hey, man, sorry. I was planning this heart surgery I'm about to get, right? So they feel terrible. That's expert.
Well, the same thing. I think, what was it? One of the days was Canada was playing when you had your injury. And I thought, wow, Devang is just fully just ignoring us. But nope, you were in the hospital. So also,
I was in incredible pain. Yeah. Yeah.
Everything is good. Like, how do you feel? What's going on with you? What's the update?
Feeling okay. Like, it's going to be a while. Like, I think the 6 months that I feel like normal-ish. So I'm about a third of the way there. But better now, and like I can eat softer foods and I can eat more stuff. But I'll tell you this, when my mouth is wired shut, only being able to consume soup broth and juice was very interesting. Oh, it made me appreciate a lot of foods, but small steps, but I'm feeling better and it's great to be back on the show doing it. I do a tennis podcast as well, but I'm pretty nervous coming back into this because it does feel like I'm a bit rusty. So
no, not at all.
Very lucky to keep doing this show. And it's ominous, Nick. I return right after Arsenal loses a crushing third round FA Cup match to Nottingham Forest.
What the hell happened? Other than, again, I keep seeing tweets that saying Richie Larea is undefeated since they signed Nottingham Forest, even though he hasn't played a single game yet.
But he was at the ground.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
But what happened, my friend? What's going on?
Not to make excuses, but like unlike Liverpool, when someone has a sniffles and they get the game postponed, we had a bunch of guys missing. So they made us play because we don't.
Yeah.
Jurgen Klopp, maybe Mikel doesn't have the right guy on speed dial. But it was abject. It was not great. And one of those, you could see those cup losses coming where like you're not doing bad in the league. So something has to kind of fall off. And it felt like against a game championship side who's doing well under Steve Cooper, could see it coming. But not the end of the world. I mean, I'm not looking forward to playing you lads in this Carabao Cup semifinal. But AFCON, man. AFCON's timing is tough. We're missing 8 midfielders, but that's the club's own fault.
Is it 8, really?
No, I'm exaggerating. Oh, but COVID as well has taken out. And we loaned Ainsley Bay and Niles to Roma. So, poor planning.
Sometimes I think maybe these games shouldn't be played at all for a long time. Like, I know Liverpool specifically, and I know you make the jokes about the Arsenal game, whatever, but their whole team has gone down with COVID at one point.
It's wild.
I think except for maybe Salah or something like that. So you can't really predict these kind of things. And then we see, like, I know we're talking to Stevie later on or whatever, but I wanted to mention too, like, as the internationals come up to Vang, And Tim Hortons Field, like, does that seem like something that might not take place in front of fans now that we're only 20 days away from that game?
Yeah. Great question. Who knows, right? Like, and do American fans come? Like, can they come? Exactly. Like, the board is still open, but
yeah,
a lot of things left in the air regarding that for sure. You mentioned a big talk with Stevie coming up. Great to catch up with one of the OGs of this podcast. He was fantastic. Another shout out to our patrons. Thanks for sticking with us. Happy New Year to you. I know it's criminal to say that on January 11th, but I'm saying it now. Happy New Year to our lovely patrons who wished me well and were great on the Discord.
Really nice.
As I was sitting there typing away, because that's all I could do, but it was great. And I love the community we've built, and a lot more games coming. AFCON started. We're hooking up with streams in there because it's an abjectly terribly covered tournament. It's offensive how badly it's covered in certain parts of the world, including Canada. But we're finding streams and finding ways to watch. So I recommend heading on over to patreon.com/footballpodcast. Join us today. Get on the Discord. Get the show ad free. Get it early as well. It's a good deal. That's the pitch. When we come back, we talk with Stevie Caldwell about Insigne, Bob Bradley, TSC, a whole lot more coming up next on AFP. Welcome back to AFP. Well, we're without David this week, so we had to call in a ringer to aid the show. And who better than one of the founders of this very show themselves? You know him as TSC stalwart in English football, now a commentator gracing your ears across all sorts of tournaments, Mr. Stephen Caldwell. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Devine. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be back to a football podcast and to be sharing some time with you. We go back a few years, and it's nice to speak to you.
I believe my first ever real podcast interview was done with Mr. Caldwell when he retired from TFC, which was a landmark moment for me. I know for you, I know it's blah, 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 your career and all that. But for me personally, I was like, wow, this is some heavy stuff. And you were great then. And it's awesome to have you back. A lot has happened, sir, in the last few months since TFC's season ended. And I think obviously the manager being changed, and we'll talk about Bob Bradley coming into the club, but TFC has broken the bank again. Lorenzo Insigne coming for a record fee at the age of 31 from Napoli. He'll join in the summer. Stevie, you were with the club when bloody big deal, quote unquote, happened and Jermaine came over. And I think that was a seminal moment for the club. But do you see parallels between that statement that they made and the one they're making right now?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the parallels are that, you know, it's moved the club and, of course, the league forward. It's something significant to bring over a player of Insigne's quality at this stage of his career when he had multiple suitors and offers and places to go all around the world, I'm pretty sure, including some top teams in Europe, for TFC to pull that off and to bring him in is quite significant. Of course, they had to break the bank and spend more than any other teams ever had to do in MLS to achieve that. But I think it's huge, and I think that we have to, you know, respect the consistent output from MLS to bring in world-class players, to spend the money to have their team at the forefront of the league and to be pushing boundaries always. I think it's significant, and I commend them on that. It would be easy after a couple of years of COVID and playing away from home and the expense that brings and the lack of revenue that came from being in Florida and in Connecticut, and then to come back this season and have a poor season and have low attendances. It would be easy for MLSE to say, no, we're just going to take stock for a couple of years and try and even things out. But to go out and spend the most that any club has ever spent on a designated player is unbelievable. Whether he's value for that money or not will remain to be seen. But still, for them to do that is amazing in my mind.
I think that is still probably the most surprising part of this to me. It's not the... maybe it's not the type of player that they brought in, but it's the fact that they went back to the well and are willing to do another one of these five-year plans like they did. But post-Jovinko, it didn't seem like they wanted to, and they wanted to try it a different way with more of the academy, maybe building up the club. And it's been a couple years, and not normal years, as you alluded to, with them being kind of off-island and on their own for a while during this COVID time. But I think it's interesting that they went back to this model, and they're doing it as the national team has doing really well, as the Canadian women's national team has just won gold, and with the 2022 World Cup and the 2026 World Cup right on the horizon. I think that must play something into this, Stevie.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Bill Manning mentioned in his press conference numerous times, that this was about looking forward, the five-year plan, and sort of getting towards that home World Cup in 2026. And they've obviously felt that the splash of a big, well-known signing is very important. And it's not the way that some teams have went in MLS. And certainly, as you said, Devang, it's not the way that we felt this team were going to go post Jovinko and post success of, let's say, the success of the losing final in 2019, when they were trying to bring through some young players and go in a different direction, didn't quite work. And like I said, they went back to this big signing. Now, I'm a little disappointed in that. I would like to see them be a wee bit more creative and try and bring in some younger player with sell on value. There's obviously not going to be any sell on value with Insigne, and all the dollars that go into this are going to be lost. TFC are hoping that it's not necessarily lost, because he's going to bring them one or two MLS Cups. I think he's going to have to bring one or two MLS Cups for it to be worthwhile when we dissect this in years to come and decide if this was a good signing. There has to be multiple MLS Cups, in my opinion, for it to be worthwhile. But like I said, you know, I commend them for spending the money again and making Toronto the destination in MLS that a lot of players want to come to because of the city that it is, and also keeping TFC at the forefront of not just clubs in MLS, but clubs in the CONCACAF region.
You've got a better read on this than I do, because I think you're around the stadium a lot more. You're around a lot of stadiums in Canada as well. And I think it's fair to say that there's some pandemic part of this as well, but Toronto FC did fall off the map a bit in this city. And I don't think it was on the tip of anyone's mouth, really, when we're talking about sports, especially the last couple of years. You could see that by the attendance as well. And that's a combination of some awful weather that we experienced at the end of this season. But also the team, frankly, was just not very good. Did you get the sense that this was coming? Because I feel like I was a bit taken aback by how quickly it developed. And obviously these things are happening behind the scenes. But do you think this was a case of management and ownership looking at the crowds at BMO and the lack of buzz and realizing they kind of needed to resuscitate things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the reason that this happened, first and foremost, Devine. It was quite a sad state of affairs, actually, the second half of the season for TFC. Came back with a lot of optimism and had the sort of three or four games in the summer where they didn't quite get the results but played quite well, and then the sort of abysmal season just continued again and they couldn't get anything going. And there was a couple of games there where I was calling the games live at BMO Field, and I don't know, the attendance was announced at something like 10,000, but you know, I could almost count the people in the stadium. I reckon it was like in the low thousands, to be polite. So that has its effect. You know, people look at that and they say where this team's came from in 16 and 17 to packed out BMO Fields, and the buzz and the excitement and the marketplace, I guess, for TFC and the vast sporting market of Toronto was gone. And so they needed someone to bring it back, and they've decided that they're going to go to a big splash and bring in somebody who everyone knows and who's had great recent success and has had a very solid, you know, decade plus career with one of the biggest teams in Serie A and Napoli. And so it's the start of it. I don't think it's the end. I do think that they'll bring in a few other really good players, because when we think about, you know, Defoe, which turned into Jovinko, Altidore and Bradley, they were absolutely tremendous for TFC. But it was more than that, wasn't it? It was the Drew Moores, the Betashores, the Morrows, the other signings that complemented the three DPs that meant that TFC were successful. And they have to do the same again.
Clint Irwin coming in as a stable veteran keeper who's been around the block. A lot of really big additions that Tim Bezbachenko made around the Stars. 100% right. I wanted to move to the football aspect of this, because I think Insigne, like we've seen him with Napoli, we've seen him with Italy, obviously. He's got the mixtape, he's got the YouTube reels, but I'm curious as a player, Stevie, he's been with one club his whole career. He's had a couple of loan spells, maybe three loan spells, I think, but he's turning 31 as well this summer. I aged him a bit. He's still 30, but this is a one club man. That's also a bit different, I feel like, for some of the people coming over at this age to MLS who are not in the Beckham time of their career, but still in that peak area. Do you think that's going to be a big moment for him to adjust? I mean, there's a lot of things he's going to have to adjust to, including, I think, as we've all called it, like the physicality and the pace of the league. But do you think that comfort is going to be tough to find for him? Or is this something that the club has done their homework with? Because I think they have history there with Seba and other guys coming over as well.
Yeah, I think it's a concern, Devang. I do. I think that, you know, when a guy's been in a city like Naples, which is a wonderful place and, you know, has a real sort of different vibe to the rest of Italy, and is certainly people are very proud of being Napolitan and living in Naples and being, you know, distinctly from that part of Italy, I do think that there's a little bit of concern when you go anywhere else that you're going to settle and that it's going to be what you hoped it would be. But and I will say, and I can say this with you know, experience and a great deal of confidence, coming over from the UK, coming to Toronto is amazing. It's a wonderful city. It's like beyond your expectations. People can tell you how great it is, but until you get here, until you experience it, you know, you're never quite sure what it's going to be like. So I think he's coming to one of the best cities in the world. I think that he's going to be very appreciated and welcomed by the people when he comes into Toronto. And I think that as long as he listens, and I say this with all due respect, he's a guy who's had an outstanding career and who's played at the highest level, but listens and adapts, and accepts that this is a different league, that things are done differently here, and he takes his time to acclimatise and to understand it, then I've no doubt he's going to be a roaring success. If he comes thinking it's going to be Serie A or it's going to be European intensity, he's going to have an issue. So I hope he does that. I'm sure he's learnt enough in his career and experienced enough that he will be coming with open ears and open eyes. And once he settles in, I can't see anything else but him scoring plenty of goals and creating a lot for other players in his team.
The buzz will definitely be back at BMO Field. So they've checked a couple of the boxes already, and we'll see how it goes on the field. But definitely the splash they were looking for was made. You mentioned, though, Stevie, the other players obviously being key to this club, and a lot of uncertainty, to be honest, in terms of the DP situation. It sounds like Josie is probably out the door, Soteldo probably out the door, but you still have the likes of Pozuelo and Michael Bradley and Marky Delgado in the mix. For you, and you watched them a lot last year when they were arguably at their lowest, where do you think this team needs the most help? And I think center back probably is going to be the first words out of your mouth.
Yeah, centre-back for sure. They need a dominant centre-back. They need someone who can bring the ball out and who obviously has the athleticism still to cover the spaces. I do think that they need to try and reinvigorate Chris Mavinga, and the best way to do that is bringing in somebody who can lead him and who he respects and trusts. And I think that's been missing. And then obviously with Richie Larea leaving for Nottingham Forest, I still think that they've got some issues in the way that I perceive Bob Bradley to play, the kind of style I think he's going to go with. I do think they need an attacking fullback as well. And so, yeah, there's some ads to come. They need a number nine, assuming Josie leaves. They need someone who can lead that line, who can put the ball away. I don't think they can put all that weight on Insigne to kind of score all the goals. I don't think that's necessarily his greatest strength. So someone who can put the ball in the back of the net is going to be important as well. So when we kind of start adding it up, there's probably like five or six pieces there, maybe a goalkeeper. Bono and Westberg had their struggles last season, so I think maybe one of them will leave and someone else will come in to challenge the other for a starting position. So there's five or six ads to come there, and I don't think it can just be your bog standard MLS addition. I really think that they need to you know, either splash big on a trade and bring in somebody decent, or look to Europe and look to maybe some of the the different areas of Europe that are not quite as obvious as in Insignia, and you don't have the dollars to spend that kind of money to try and really find through your recruitment process somebody or players that can come in and do a good job.
They added Shane O'Neill just before the new year, who is, I think, fits that mold of a center back you're talking about, Stevie. But I think that's one of a couple they'll have to add. I think Eric Savalleta gone, Omar gone. There's plenty of turnover. Be fascinating to see, because Bob Bradley is de facto your sporting director, your manager, your head coach. He's everything right now. And we have a good guide of what he wants to do with LAFC, of course, but also where else he's been. I'm curious to see what do you think the Bradley effect will be on this club? Because I think Greg Fanny leaving obviously was a blow. And even though it was a surprise, I think everyone didn't really see this kind of coming as a dream job for Greg. And there was another step for him to take. This feels like Bob Bradley coming to win and win a couple of times. How do you think he's going to do it?
Yeah, I think that Bob Bradley's got great experience, and he certainly knows what he's doing. And I think giving him full control was important. That's what Greg Vanney had, and that's why Greg was successful. He was given the time to build something, and eventually the sort of success came. And it'll probably be the same kind of story for Bob Bradley. He'll get some time, and he'll be allowed to build something. And I think he's a guy who plays good football. He had an amazing team in LAFC. The big disappointment for his point of view would probably be that he didn't win an MLS Cup. He didn't kind of finish that off. But as we know from the playoffs, it becomes, you know, kind of hit and miss near the end. It's by no means a given that you win the cup if you're the best team. And there's no doubt he had the best team 1 or 2 years in LA. Just couldn't get the job done. That'll be important to him, that he does come to Toronto and wins an MLS Cup. But I think they've got a guy who knows what he wants, who will be pretty clear with the players in terms of what he expects, and will sort of build that culture and hopefully winning team for the TFC fans to be consistent and to push for MLS Cups for a few years.
Well, and the TSC talk where we started regarding the bloody big deal, and just taking us all back to that time, I'm curious to see, what was your, like, how did he view this all? I know you were with the club already, but I feel like I don't know if they're like telling you like when you're signing, or like, this is what we're going to do, this is our big plan. Like, did you have an idea that this is what Mr. Lightwicky wanted to do, or was this sprung on you? And like, what were those moments like when you kind of realized that this was on the cards for the club?
Yeah, I was in a fortunate position where when I first signed under Ryan Nelson, the head coach, you know, the sort of plan about what the organisation wanted to do was laid out to me. It was part of the reason why I decided to leave the Championship at the time and to come to MLS. The first season, of course, it was going to take a bit of time, maybe a little bit like this project that Bob Bradley's in. I knew it was going to take a bit of time, and we saw some improvements. And then heading into that winter, when the big signings happened, that, you know, I was sort of privy to some of the conversations through my relationship as the captain and my relationship with Ryan Nelson, that there was some big names being talked about. And it was just great. It was exciting to see them come in. And I think they all added something. You know, obviously Michael's legacy is there for everyone to see. He's still at the club, and he's achieved so much as a player for Toronto FC. But I think Jermaine even added a big part as well. And I do think that he changed the mindsets of a lot of players round about him. Some that probably would talk to his influence might be, you know, a Jonathan Osorio, a Justin Morrow, other guys around the league like a Nick Hagland and these fellas. I do think Jermaine had a big impact on their guys. And ultimately it wasn't for him, but it was just that change in philosophy. It was like, we're here to win. We're not here to make up the numbers anymore. And we're going to work hard and do what it takes to create a winning culture and a winning team. And TFC did that. And they did it for a number of years. And now they're back to a drawing board. I don't think they're back to a level of, you know, 2014 at all. I think they're way ahead of that, even though they had a pretty abysmal season. I think that they're at a different point. The key thing for me, and I'll probably end on this point, is that the one mistake I think TFC have made for a number of years is assessing where their talent is. I think they felt they could use these guys and make this last longer than obviously what happened. So I think that there needs to be some ruthless decisions made in the next, you know, 6 to 12 months around players and around, you know, the impact that they have on the team. I do think that they need to be pretty strong and sort of forget the past in many ways and make sure it's about the present. And if you're delivering and you're doing what the coach is asking, then of course it's irrelevant if you're 35 or you're 17. But if you're not, then it's, you know, it's irrelevant what you've done in the past. It's about here and now. And I think that Bob Bradley will be that guy. He will be ruthless in that regard. And it's going to be needed if KFC are going to have a good season in 2022.
It definitely felt in 2014 like MLSC was beginning to treat TFC like their other teams, and mainly the Raptors and the Leafs. And I think that for a lifelong Torontonian was pretty shocking, because I didn't think that was going to happen, to be honest. And I even worked there at the time, so it was a surprise. And then I think to see them go pot committed again and try this again is very interesting. And I think this is also a big marketing play, like we talked about with the World Cup coming, and the fact that, I don't know if soccer has been more popular ever in this country or in Toronto, Steve. Like, I think generally, not just TFC, MLS, Canada, like if you want to talk about soccer to anyone on the street, you can likely have a conversation. It might be a league you're not familiar with, but you can literally talk about this sport with almost everyone. And I think we've gotten to such an amazing level from those days of having the double-decker bus and the funny ad to where we are now. It's kind of remarkable.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? And, you know, you can speak about it way better than me, Devang, but I, you know, 8.5 years, I think I've been here, coming up to 9. So I have seen massive growth in the game, and I've seen the way that it's perceived around the city, and obviously from a broadcasting point of view, and even my time in the office at MLSE, to see, you know, that or be a part of that success. And I think it's only going to get bigger. I really do. I've always believed that. I think it's part of the reason why I came to Toronto to be part of something amazing and something significant. And now my interest and my kind of wishes go above and beyond TFC. They go all over Canada in terms of the three teams in MLS, and indeed the CPL and the national team. And I've had maybe a little bit of, you know, a part in a number of the different clubs and different experiences. So I'm enjoying it. I'm proud to be here. I think that this game is going to get stronger and stronger. I see the talent that's coming behind the brilliant national team that we have at the moment. And I just know that competition for places is going to be there, and this game is here to stay and become like really significant over the next few years. So, yeah, it's like people always ask what caused it, and, you know, is it Javinko? Is it, you know, is it Montreal TFC two-leg, you know, conference final?
Yeah.
Is it the national team success? The real answer is it's a bit of everything, isn't it? It's just everything adds to it. Every player that's been a part of it, everyone in the media, everyone who's helped promote and elevate this game plays their part in it. And I think that as long as we continue to beat the drum and talk about some of the great players that have come through Canada, some of the great players that are in Canada, and the success of, you know, all the teams that play in MLS or CPL, it's only going to get bigger and eventually, hopefully, become the biggest sport in the country.
You mentioned the national team, Stevie, so we're going to talk about them a lot coming up after the break. We'll talk Richie's move to the championship, Nottingham Forest. We'll talk about Tejan's move to Belgium and the upcoming games, the big one against the States at Hamilton. All of that coming up next on AFP. Welcome back to AFP. Well, it saddens me to talk about such a joyous thing like Richie Larea's transfer to Nottingham Forest while having to acknowledge that Nottingham Forest has taken out Arsenal, my beloved Arsenal, in the third round of the FA Cup. But it's true. I'm glad Richie's probably his first experience at the ground to watch a game was that, because that's probably something he'll never forget. Incredible move for him. I think another one of those examples, Stevie, of I'm glad this league existed. I'm glad Toronto FC existed, because after going to Orlando at his school and Richie kind of needing a place, I think he found a safe haven in Toronto to kind of restart things. And boy, did he ever, to become arguably the best attacking fullback in CONCACAF. just off the top line, Stevie, what do you think about this move and where? Like, I you know the championship better than anyone. What do you think this means for Richie at his age?
I think it's enormous, and I'm glad you mentioned that game, Devang. I watched it myself, and I was thinking about Richie. I have a great relationship with Richie, and I was thinking about him being in the City Ground for the first time, and think back to my memories of playing there and how loud it sounded on the day, and you know, just the anticipation, I'm sure, and the excitement within him to kind of pull that shirt on and get out there himself, hopefully pretty soon. Must have been huge, and I kind of know the journey that he's had to make this happen. You know, it's not been easy for Richie on the field, and even in the recent few months off the field, in terms of like trying to push towards getting this without sounding ungrateful to a club that gave him that sort of next chance in MLS and believed in him. Greg Vanney and Toronto FC believed in Richie and sort of transformed him, I guess, because he was playing midfield before he came to TFC, transformed him into this marauding fullback, this player who can create something out of nothing. And in these wide areas, whether it be in his natural right or on the left side, as we've seen for club and country. And I think that as long as he keeps that determination and that inquisitive learning nature of his to be better, to improve, and also the belief in himself and what he already has and the kind of levels he can get to, I think he's going to be a great success. And he's going to learn, and it's going to be good for the national team, because when you're in the championship, I can tell you I've had great seasons in the championship and I've had awful seasons in the championship and there's nowhere to hide. It's Tuesday, Saturday, and it never ends, and it's grueling and relentless, and there's some quality players, but there are also some tough places to go and some tough stadiums, and so he's going to learn a lot about himself in the next few weeks. And I don't mean that any way disrespectfully towards MLS, but he's never felt anything like this. I promise you, he'll be thrown right into the fire, and he'll realise how grueling it can be, and how that consistency to not make mistakes and to provide what you're there to do has to come every single week. Once he gets that, and once he understands that, I think he's got other moves in him to bigger clubs in Europe. I really do. Or potentially Forest can even get up, the club size that they are. Brilliant football club, Nottingham Forest. But I do think Premier League or another top five league in Europe could be on his horizon if he learns that resiliency and that grit and determination quickly, and he finds his consistency.
Steve Cooper getting rave reviews for what he's done at Forest and where they are now. I think they're on a couple of defeats, but up to ninth in the table. I mean, we hear this all the time. Like, what is the MLS equivalent to Europe? Or like, what would be the equivalent league in terms of maybe skill level, which I think is maybe impossible to measure because it's just not able to. It's not, we just can't do it right now. But you hear championship. It's often said championship is maybe the closest equivalent in Europe or in the UK at least. But I don't know necessarily if that's true, if you agree, Stevie, but I wanted to ask, like, what do you think will be the biggest shock to Richie? Like, what do you think will be the biggest jolt to him, maybe on the pitch, maybe not so much life off of it, but what do you think will be the biggest change technically as a footballer?
I think technically as the ability to deal with it, I think it's more the grind, the grueling nature of the championship. Like, it's tough. Like I said, if you're on that winning run, you roll to the next game and you pick up another 3 points and it's amazing, and you're having fun with your mates, you're on buses and planes and trains, and you're constantly travelling, recovering, preparing or playing. It's just there's very little time to actually, you know, work on things and to almost like assess your game and to improve your game. So I think that'll be a challenge, because there is time in MLS. There's time to work on concepts and tactics and work on your own game. And because of the physicality of the championship, you can't really do that. You're just almost always preventing injury and sort of like playing and preparing. So he's going to have to get used to that, to get used to the speed that brings. And like I said, if he does that, then I think he can be a big success, because technically speed and quality, he's got it. I do think that he's going to have to defend more. I've seen massive improvements in his defending. I've I've of course worked with him when I was coaching with the national team, and I love working with him because he wants to learn, he wants to get better. He's always asking good questions about, you know, where could I improve? You know, he wants the honest answers. He wants to look deep and hard in himself and to get better. And so if he keeps that attitude and he can deal with the grind and he can keep up his fitness and keep his body intact, then he'll be a huge success.
That's one player making a big move to Europe. Another player that we've known is going for a while, Tejan Buchanan. Is that Club Bruges now in Belgium? Steve, obviously a different situation. And Tejan having one of the best years ever for Canadian player in MLS. Do you think the language issue, or maybe not issue, but do you think going to Belgium for Tejan will be a bigger cultural shock than Richie going to England?
It's a great question. I think cultural shock for sure. But I think when you think about the football, it's probably a bit of a smoother move in terms of, you know, like he's going to go to one of the best teams in Belgium. He's a wonderful football player, Tejan. He's going to get opportunities to show his skills. And I do think he's going to get that kind of leeway and time, maybe out with a championship spotlight where, you know, he can kind of just ease into it. Whereas I don't think Richie's going to get that luxury. I think he's going to be thrown right in. Richie is obviously going to be in an English-speaking country. He's probably going to see some synergies to Nottingham or wherever he lives round about Nottingham to Canada. And Tejan's going to have a different kind of lifestyle, I guess. But both very interesting moves. And I think moves that tell you a little bit about the players and about the people. And, you know, when I first met Tejan, he comes across as a very introvert, shy guy. He doesn't say a lot, Tejan. He's a quiet guy, very respectful, lovely fella, but doesn't say too much. And then he puts on his boots and he steps across a line, either into the you know, to play a game or to train, and something just changes in him. He becomes an animal. And it's in a good way. He just has this drive and this determination and this confidence and this power and sort of swagger that make him so great. And I love that about him. And I do think that it's his biggest strength. And he has to keep that throughout his career. He has to learn pretty quickly that he's just as good as these guys. He's going to be playing against good players. He's going to be playing with good players. And I think he has to realise quite quickly, I'm as good as he's, if not better. And again, if he has that mindset and he obviously works harder than he's ever worked before, and he sort of takes in that confidence and that mindset, then I think he's got another move in him really quickly, because he has all the attributes to be a top player. I really believe that. He can play five positions, six positions. He just seems to be able to play anywhere in the park, which people love these days. Coaches love that. They love that flexibility. You can pick an 11 and nobody knows how you're going to play. Is it three at the back? Is it four at the back? He can go up front. He can go wide right, wide left, left wing back, right wing back. He plays everywhere. And I think his game will develop more and more, and quite a technical league in Belgium where he can start to learn when and how to find little pockets and to use his brain a little bit to have people guessing, defenders guessing. So I'm very excited to see how he goes. I feel really strongly about both these guys. I know them personally. I've worked with them. I've spent time with them. And I'm a big fan of both of them as men and of course, as football players.
Not to steal Fred Van Fleet's saying, but I do feel like they also bet on themselves. And these are the type of guys that want to prove people wrong and want to take these steps of maybe the less traveled on the road to those clubs that you're talking about, Steven, on the road to playing in the biggest leagues in the world.
Last thing I want to say before we forget is that, you know, Richie was offered an astronomical amount of money for a fullback in MLS by TFC, and he decided he wanted to go to Europe and wanted to go to the toughest league in Europe. The toughest league in Europe, I can promise you, it's even tougher than the Premier League in terms of what we talked about, the grueling, you know, grit and determination. And that just tells you about the guy. That's how burning his desire is to be a success out with North America. So credit to him and you know, everybody's rooting for him, certainly here in Canada.
So with that in mind, as we hype those two guys up in their journeys to the great beyond, let's talk about these upcoming games, Stevie, because in a couple of weeks, CONCACAF World Cup qualifying will be back. Yes, it's true. Canada is still top of the table ahead of the United States and Mexico, but I think this might be the trickiest stretch, Stevie, for the Canadians in terms of what they have to do, where they have to go. Of course, the United States at home, but in between that, some big trips to Honduras and El Salvador. This is kind of top level, Z, but like, do they worry you maybe for where these guys are at? I know Fonzie tested positive for COVID, but hopefully, I mean, who knows at this point, but hopefully he's kind of gotten that out of the way. But are you worried a bit about how the squad will kind of be after this break, or is it all systems go? Like, how much man management has John Herdman been able to do during this break?
Well, I'm never worried about these guys, I must say. Like, they're just unbelievable, their relentlessness and their focus and determination to succeed and to prove everybody right or wrong, wherever you sit on what you think this team will achieve. But this is the trickiest window. We'll have to say that, you know, been part of two January camps with the men's national team in the past two Januaries there, and you see the guys come in, they're a little bit off in terms of their pace and their fitness, and I think that's, you know, I know that's going to be a concern of John Herdman's. I know he's made some changes and created a schedule that allows these guys to come into this camp with the best possible preparation. But the cool thing about this national team is that they keep getting challenges. We keep asking, you know, are they capable of this? Are they up for this? Can they go here and win? Mm-hmm. Can they win a big game? Can they do whatever? And I think that every step of the way, they've answered positively. And so, you know, the question I'll ask is, can they go into Honduras and can they win? You know, and that's probably one of the ones that I've still got in the back of my mind. Are these guys capable of going into a tough environment and picking up a victory? And you know, like I said, they're so focused on achieving that. I mean, having worked with them, I've no doubt that they will. I've no doubt that they can do it. But it's always like, you know, breaking new ground and getting to the next step and kind of showing that they're capable of beating a Mexico and, you know, victory against the US, winning a big away game. These things are coming up. It's all on their horizon. They've achieved a lot of them, but some of them have still to come. So I think it's going to be a tough window. I don't think USA is the toughest game. I think it's the least toughest game. I think the first one's the toughest for sure.
Wowza, really?
Yeah, I do. I think the toughest one's the first one.
That first one also, Stevie, probably changes. Actually, this is another question. Like, does the result in that Honduras game kind of change their calculations for the upcoming game against the US and forward from there? Like, why are they looking at Honduras as 3 points? Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're looking at it as 3 points. I think that they'll have a real plan. John's obviously one of the most prepared coaches in CONCACAF, so he's going to have a plan that he thinks is the right way forward for this team. I think if they go in, I'd like to see them attack that game. I think they've been a wee bit cautious in their play in this group stage. And some could say, well, what are you talking about? It's obviously worked. They're top of the group. I just think they've got more. I do think that they can stick the chest out and go into Honduras and win. And I hope that they do that, because I think that if they stay in the front foot and they stay positive, I believe they'll win this group. I don't believe that they'll just qualify for Qatar. I think they'll win the group. And that's an unbelievable statement. I think they're going to go beat Mexico and the US in the group stage is unbelievable, really, from a few years ago. But I just know what they're capable of. So the Honduras game's enormous for me. Go there, pick up the 3 points. It sets up what's going to be an amazing night in Hamilton against the old enemy, and the US, and a game that I know they can win. You know, we played them in the Gold Cup just recently, and I know they won 1-0, but we absolutely dominated them. We've beat them at BMO Field. Yes, we lost in Orlando, but when you actually look at the stats, we made big mistakes. But when you look at the stats, we were right in that game with a better team, actually. We were just caught lacking in both boxes, which is where the game matters, I guess. But we are confident that we could go toe-to-toe against these guys. So Canada have got a great opportunity in this window to really set the tone, to put one foot in the, you know, on the airplane towards Qatar, you know, next winter. It's there for them. They just need to go and believe it and do it.
We need to totally kill that ghost of 8-1 in San Pedro Sula. Yeah. Like, I know we moved on and things are obviously better now, but no matter how better they are, I still remember that and they have to be extinguished. I agree with you. I think that Honduras game is huge. And obviously it's the first one, but it will also dictate kind of what Canada needs to do. Because I think with the draw now being out and knowing that it is New Zealand probably that they'll play if they come fourth, it's not the end of the world, but I don't think they want to come fourth. I know that, right? So
they want to win it, Divine.
Like, no, I know. And that, again, if you told me that 2 years ago, I would have laughed out. I would have laughed at you, Stevie, but here we are. And you believe longer than I did. Quickly, I want to ask you about a couple of Americans, enemy scouting, but Ricardo Pepe to Augsburg for $20 million. Daryl Dike to West Brom, another championship move. Both strikers, different leagues, though. Do you think it's instant impact for Daryl Dike at West Brom? It's a different type of player than Richie, but similar type of move.
Yeah, I think he's got the profile to be a good striker in the championship. We saw a lad play at the weekend for Forrest Davies, who was on loan for Aston Villa, who similar type profile, strong and can run the channels and you know, can bring people into play. So he's been in the championship, as we know, with Barnsley and did pretty well then just a little while ago. So you know, I'm still a little bit, I still think he's got a lot to go in his game to be really top championship, or indeed for him to be considered to make that next step to Premier League. And I think his game needs to improve a little bit. From what I've seen him live a good few times now. I've done a bit of work on him when Canada played USA in the Gold Cup. And he's got a lot of attributes, but his game needs to get cleaner. He needs to improve. Pepe, I don't know as much. I like what I've seen. I think he's a player who can be really top. I like choosing that kind of German route. It seems to work for players. They seem to get a bit of time and they really get the development in the Bundesliga that is needed to kind of go up the levels. So I'm happy that Pepe's went there. A crazy amount of money as well. It shows you how people think in North American players these days. It's just amazing that the you know, the impact that the Fonzies and Atibas and Larens and Pulisic have had, that they're thought about in a different vein these days. So yeah, no, I'm excited to see Pepe and see how he develops. And I've got some doubts about DK, but I do think he's at a great club in West Brom, and if he can improve the little bits of his game, and his next steps probably to a Premier League team.
Fantastic. Some late breaking news via good friend Nick. Looks like Dom Dwyer is heading to Dallas, where he'll be bought out, but that draft pick TFC had in the Super Draft is no longer theirs. Yes, the Super Draft is this weekend, as we mentioned off the top. So there's an update, and it sounds like there's going to be another CPL club coming in the Windsor, Essex County area, which is big news. We'll get to that, obviously, in the days and weeks to come. Steve, you want to stick around for the mailbag, answer some questions?
Sounds great. Thanks, Divine.
Amazing. All right, coming back after the break, we'll hit the mailbag, Ask AFP.
Welcome back, and now it's time for Ask AFP. Stevie is joining us for this one. Thanks so much to everyone who sent their questions this week. If you didn't get a chance to send in your own questions, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. Our first question goes to Jason G, and he asks, now that Dallas has a big bag of money to spend, what do they need to do to become a top team in MLS / even win the Supporters Shield?
It's a great question, and I think this might go down to like what is in the soul of FC Dallas going forward. Like, they kept saying that Pepe wasn't for sale, he wasn't for sale, and then I think obviously the $20 million price tag that Augsburg was willing to drop changed their mind, and I get it. It makes sense, but so far it seems like they're kind of doubling down on their own investments, and Jesus Ferreira got a new deal to make him a DP for something like $2.1 million, but I think that's it. Like, I don't think that they're going to be dishing out cash for international transfers, let alone spending within the league to an extent that rivals the bigger market clubs, even though they're in a huge market like Frisco, Dallas, Stevie. Like, I think FC Dallas is in a position where they're maybe not part of that same structure as TFC is in this league, where it's not have and have nots, but there's scales of ambition in terms of winning. That might sound unfair, but I'm curious to hear what you think.
Yeah, it's not their philosophy, is it? Their philosophy is to promote from within, to use that great academy of theirs to give players opportunities and then to sell them on. So I don't think that I think for one moment to spend the entire sum of money that came in for Pepe. They'll reinvest that. They'll use that wisely. I like the move to keep Ferreira and to give him the money that he deserves. So hopefully he can come up with that. I would like to see them make one signing. That's the one thing I would say. Like, sign one young South American, like a Atlanta or an LAFC, or go even New York City with some of their guys, Castellanos, and that. Maybe go into that market, whether it be Argentina or Uruguay, wherever, and sign a young guy, give him a bit of cash, and see if he can develop and sort of lead the team and the young guys to a bit of success. That would be my wish if I was a Dallas FC fan.
Next up, Tyler asks, we see bigger names and talents coming to MLS when it comes to players, but MLS teams can never seem to sign any big name coaches. Why is that? How does it change? Clearly, money isn't the issue, Dubang.
Millions dollar question, I think, right? Pardon the horrible pun. But yeah. I was reading about the salary cap for coaches in the CPL, which obviously is at a different level and still a young league, but that salary cap may be taking them out of the market for certain coaches. Maybe Mark Dos Santos would have came, but I think that wasn't meant to be in Ottawa. I think it's money, Stevie, frankly. I don't think it's only about ambition anymore. I don't know if you go to MLS in your 30s after managing in the Bundesliga and that says that you can never go back as it once used to, maybe. I think right now it is, I think cash is on par with reaching the pinnacle of your profession. Is that fair, or is it strictly about climbing the professional ladder? Because I think if the money was right, you could get some pretty intriguing guys to make the move over from Europe.
Yeah, I think that it's a little bit of fear from the MLS teams to bring in somebody out with the league who may not know the league so well. And we've seen some great imports that have came in, coach well in the league, and we've seen some others who have really crashed and failed, So I think there's that fear, Devang. I don't necessarily think that they're reluctant to spend, the big guys will spend the money on whatever they think will work. So, if it was a case of TFC being sure that Mourinho, just choosing a name because he's one of the biggest guys that we always think it would come to Toronto and pay him $10 million and bring MLS Cups, I think they would do that. I just think there's always that fear that it takes a bit of time to get to know the league. And I think it's a fair one. I do think it's a different league for anywhere else in Europe, and especially if you're a coach and you're dealing with salary cap and budgets and stuff like that. It's a little bit different. So we'll start to see more and more, and we'll have varying levels of success, because I don't necessarily buy into the fact that you need to have played in MLS, you need to know MLS. I think if you're a smart guy and you listen, then you can learn pretty quickly and realise how this league works and the little nuances and intricacies that determine whether you're successful or not. So big names will come. They may not be as forthcoming as when it comes to DPs and players, but I do think we'll see bigger coaches in the next few years coming over to MLS to try themselves at this level.
It's a feather in their cap that you have someone like Patrick Vieira come to MLS and then end up in the Premier League. Like, I think that's a great sell as well in terms of getting talent to come to this league.
And finally, Semper Zebra asks, we talk a lot about how the Insigne signing is a transformative thing for MLS. However, besides Toronto, do we start to see other clubs follow suit with this similar type of signing? Is the league moving into a different direction? Or again, are they all trying to gear up towards that 2026 World Cup, where if you maybe get some more big name players, something good starts to happen?
You want to go first, Stevie? I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I I don't think there's many teams in MLS that would spend the money that TFC have spent on Insigne. I really don't. I think that they look at it from a business point of view, and they wonder if it's even worth it recouping that money, you know. And I don't think it's the philosophy of even some of the bigger teams, like take LAFC for example. I know they've signed Vela, and they have signed some older DPs, but really their philosophy is to go and try and bring in young South Americans and players with real sell-on value. You know, you can't say for a moment that Insigne has any sell-on value. So I don't know if much will change. I don't think that it's necessarily the business model that most clubs in MLS want to use. TFC have decided to go there again, and they have the reasons for that. But most other clubs want some of that value back, Devang, don't they?
They do. And like Atlanta's an interesting example, because they could do it over again. Pete Martinez and Ezequiel Barco, they don't make those transfers. And that kind of falls into like their blueprint of going to South America, but spending big dollars to lure in some big talent. I find it interesting because like those conversations about TFC's payroll, they used to dominate the conversation back in the 2014-2015 area, where that was like one of the first things that rival fans said as kind of like a negative thing, where it's like, look how much money they spent and it's only this good. And I found that backwards, because I think though obviously it took some time and there was a turbulent start, you saw what the investment was, and it signified genuine care in the product. And I don't think that's ever a bad thing. So I did see some backlash to TFC maybe repeating themselves here, and people not jealousy, but being like, well, we don't want to do it that way. We want to do it our own way. But I think the league would be better served if we had a few more clubs taking these big swings like this. Because it does make for exciting talk. Like, if Lorenzo Insigne is dropped from the Italian team before these qualifiers coming up and potentially against Portugal, this is all we will be talking about is that for a good couple of weeks. But I think that's a good conversation to have, because again, people are interested, and usually that ends up mattering the most, I think, in terms of being relevant and people caring about your product. So I wish other clubs were able to follow TSC's suit like this, maybe not for Insigne, but for similar types of players who are not exiting their prime, but currently in it, but maybe that's pie in the sky.
Yeah, no, and I think that the thing about an Insigne signing is it's more than just kind of what he does on the field. It's what he does to that brand, that fan base, what he does to your player pool, how he makes them think, the professionalism that the Drogba's and the Rooney's and the Henry's brought to MLS. You know, it's more than just on the field and how many goals and assists did he get. So I think you're right in saying that, Devang. You know, there's like more impact from a signing like Insigne than just the input on the field. So let's see if anybody else uses that. I don't think they'll be spending the 15 or 18 million, whatever number it is that Insigne is getting. But I think, you know, getting towards 7, 8, 9, 10 is possible for some of the bigger hitters in the league.
Just to end though, Steven, you know this way better than I do, but like when I was with the club and like I was surprised how around Larry Tannenbaum was to the extent he was. And I think back then it was about showing like this is the commitment to the investment and this is how much it means, but he hasn't really wavered. He's still been there. Like I don't think if Larry's gone, they're still doing this type of thing right now in 2022.
No, he's a driving force, isn't he? And he always has been. He's always been sitting in the same seats. He never got himself a nice fancy suite. You know, he sat in the same seats, the same people were around about him. And, you know, win, lose, or draw, Larry would be there at the end of the game. He'd come around the change room and he'd shake everybody's hands and he'd congratulate or commiserate. And he'd know every player's name. And he never went right to Michael Bradley or myself as a captain or Jermaine or whoever. He went around every single player and had, you know, 20, 30 second conversation with everyone. And showed his commitment. And I think that's absolutely massive, because he's been the life and soul of this club and he continues to be so. Because, you know, Bell and Rogers are one thing, but don't think for a minute that this Insigne signing would have happened with Larry Tenenbaum's stamp of approval. He would have been the driving force behind this. He's the one that's empowered Bill Manning and Bob Bradley to go and get this done. And he's still the main reason that TFC are thought so highly in this city and North American soccer in general.
Mr. Caldwell, that was a blast. The door is always open for you to return.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it, guys. I appreciate you giving me the time to come on, and good luck, and I'll hopefully see you in person soon.
Amazing. Before we go, a reminder, a rating or a review for this podcast would be incredible. You can find us pretty much everywhere you can get your podcast. So please, if you could do that, that'd be great. We're on Twitter at A Football Pod. And of course, on patreon.com/afootballpodcast. A major thanks to producer Greg and Nick and Steven. Of course, thank you all for listening to AFP. We'll talk to you next week.